I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's October 10th, and we have a lot to talk about. I'm in Milan, Italy this week because ECTRIMS, the largest MS research conference in the world, gets underway here tomorrow. I'll be sharing lots more from ECTRIMS as over 10,000 MS researchers and clinicians will spend the next few days sharing their work and demonstrating the real progress that's being made in solving multiple sclerosis. And because experts have learned so much more about MS over the past two or three decades, the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis has called for a new framework to be adopted, a framework for describing MS, researching MS, diagnosing MS, and treating MS. The committee established a working group to focus on developing this new framework, and full disclosure, it's my honor to be a member of this working group. Some of the most important work our group will undertake is engaging with all the stakeholders affected by this transition that will lead us into what I consider the next generation of MS care. We started the process of reaching out to stakeholders all over the world by launching a global survey, and just a few weeks ago, the results from that survey were published. Joining me today to discuss these survey results is the Chief Advocacy, Services, and Science Officer for the National MS Society, Dr. Tim Cutsey. But before we get to my conversation with Tim, there are a few other things that you should know about. I want to give you a quick reminder that we're just a couple of days away from the second annual Hispanic Latinx MS Experience Summit. It's taking place October 12th from 1 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. Eastern Time. The Hispanic Latinx MS Experience Summit is a virtual event that will give you an opportunity to hear from experts, participate in discussions about both emotional and physical wellness, and maybe most importantly, you'll have an opportunity to connect with others in the Hispanic Latinx community who are affected by MS during informal online meetups. The Hispanic Latinx MS Experience Summit is an opportunity to share stories and explore common experiences of living with MS. Whether you live with MS or have a loved one who lives with MS, you'll leave the summit with stronger connections to the information, support, and people who can make your life with MS better in the coming year. It all takes place this Thursday, October 12th, from 1 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. Eastern Time. There's no cost to participate, and there's still time for you to register. I'd recommend registering even if you can't make it to the live online event. By registering, you'll still gain access to the session recordings and resources that are going to be available in both English and Spanish. So if you're looking for more information or you're ready to register right now, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Study results from Sweden show that most patients with relapsing-remitting MS who were treated with autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or AHSCT, showed no evidence of disease activity for between 5 and 10 years after receiving the stem cell treatment. This study followed 174 Swedish patients who were living with MS and were treated with AHSCT. After 5 years, 73% of these patients showed no evidence of disease activity, and after 10 years, 65% showed no evidence of disease activity. In terms of their physical disability, of the 174 patients, 149 had a baseline EDSS score of 3.5. After 5 years, 54% of these patients showed improvement. 37% were stable, and just 9% had worsened, and there was no record of even a single treatment-related death. The Swedish Board of Health and Welfare approved autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation for treating MS in 2016, But in most countries, it still hasn't been integrated into clinical guidelines. In 2020, the National MS Society issued its own recommendations for using AHSCT to treat MS. Today, the BEAT-MS clinical trial is ongoing in the US and the UK, and this trial is comparing treating MS with AHSCT to treating MS with high-efficacy disease-modifying therapies. Perhaps the result of this trial will provide the evidence needed to incorporate AHSCT into the standard of care for those candidates who fit the specific patient criteria. If you're wondering what that patient criteria is and for whom AHSCT is most effective, you'll find that information on the National MS Society's website, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study from Sweden, you'll also find that link in the show notes. Results from a Phase 3 clinical trial show that a cognitive behavioral therapy program delivered over the internet and accessed using self-paced remote modules significantly eased symptoms of depression and improved the quality of life among people living with MS and depression. One out of every two people with MS will be diagnosed with depression at some point in their disease course. And accessing mental health care can be challenging. It can be physically and logistically challenging just to get to that appointment. It can be financially challenging. And post-pandemic, it can even be challenging finding a mental health professional who has time to see new patients. So being able to access self-paced virtual care that's been shown to be effective is a potential game changer. And the findings of this Phase 3 trial showed a significant drop in depressive symptoms among patients. One researcher went so far as to label the results remarkable. And scientists don't often resort to superlatives like that. The clinical trial enrolled 279 adults living with MS and clinically significant depression at 5 sites in Germany and the United States. 44% of the study participants were using antidepressants at the beginning of the study. The cognitive behavioral therapy course was divided into 10 weekly modules that were designed to promote positive thinking and behavior. The content that each study participant encountered in each module was determined by their responses to the previous module. Each study participant's depressive symptoms were measured at the beginning of the study, and then 3 months later. And when the study participants' depressive symptoms were evaluated against a control group who didn't receive the cognitive behavioral therapy, well, their depressive symptoms showed a significant decrease. The outcome of this study demonstrates that cognitive behavioral therapy is a safe and effective online tool that can be used to reduce depressive symptoms among people living with MS. And that's a significant step forward. I should also mention that if you're a regular listener, you first heard about this work last year when the initial results of the Phase 2 trial were announced at ECTRIMS. This year, as ECTRIMS gets underway tomorrow, I'm hoping we're going to be privy to the next significant breakthrough in solving the riddle of multiple sclerosis. If you'd like to review the details of this Phase 3 clinical trial, you'll find a link in today's show notes. As ECTRIMS gets started and researchers and clinicians continue filling in the remaining knowledge gaps that will stop MS progression, restore lost function, and finally end MS forever, the timing couldn't be more perfect to talk with Dr. Tim Cutsey about how a new framework for describing MS will usher in the next generation of MS care. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, the Chief Advocacy, Services, and Science Officer for the National MS Society, Tim Cutsey. At the beginning of this year, the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis called for a new framework to describe MS. The proposed framework would be an update on the language used to describe MS that's been with us for almost 30 years. And the proposed framework would describe MS in terms of the biological mechanisms that are actually taking place in each individual patient's central nervous system. Just a couple of weeks ago, the results of a survey were published, providing us with a sense of how neurologists and MS specialists around the world were thinking about this proposed change. Joining me to walk us through how these survey results will inform the work that's being done and what the next steps might be in developing a new framework to describe MS is the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Kutze. Welcome back to the podcast, Tim.
Hey, John. Great to be back with you and your audience.
When you joined me at the beginning of the year, we talked about how this proposed framework would affect people living with MS. And if any of today's listeners happen to have missed that conversation, I hope they'll give Real Talk MS episode number 280 a listen. And I'll be sure to include a link to that episode in today's show notes. But just to bring everybody up to speed, why is this new framework for describing MS being proposed?
So that's a great question, John, and definitely encourage your listeners to go back to episode 280. You know, just as a top line, you know, we've used these terms of relapsing, remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, primary progressive MS as ways that doctors can describe to a person, here's where you are in your MS journey. The FDA and the European Medicines Agency, that's the European counterpart to the FDA that approves treatments, use those descriptors or labels in the approval documents. And people, of course, with living with the disease say, you know, I'm relapsing, I'm primary progressive, I'm secondary progressive. And while those descriptors, as they're called by the doctors, served us well when they were first introduced in 1996, when we needed to organize how we described MS, we also know that science has moved on a long way since 1996, you know, to 2023. And the work of the Clinical Trials Committee has been to say, you know, how do we begin to evolve our language so that when a person is sitting across from the doctor is able to describe the disease to them and say, and here's what's going on in your brain and spinal cord at this time. And the framework we're proposes that we have descriptors that are then anchored to say, you have relapsing MS, and here's what's happening in your body at this time. And then importantly, to be able to then take the next step to say, and this is what we're going to do to try to manage the disease. Here are things you could do to perhaps, you know, help address, you know, things that could be affecting your MS, like if you have hypertension, if a person smokes or not. So that was the purpose, and it was really to try to bring, you know, to bring the language we used into the 21st century, in a sense.
So now let's get into this survey. First, what was the goal of the survey?
Yeah, so a great question. So we proposed this framework, and we said, you know, we need to start really looking at these big descriptors and start changing them. But one of the other aspects of this kind of work is when you have these terms, which are used literally worldwide. So 3 million people living with MS in the world today have had a doctor tell them you have MS and it's probably in one of these categories. You know, when you're going to change from that, which is, you know, a very well-established, sticky framework, as we would call it, easy to understand, you should understand what does the global community think is needed and say, you know, one, does change need to happen? And two, if change is going to happen, what am I looking for? Because, you know, we're very cognizant, as, you know, you and I have had these conversations, is that, you know, when you introduce something new, that means you're replacing something else. And you, you know, people who've lived with a term, you know, who say have been living with a diagnosis or a prognosis of secondary progressive MS are going to ask, so do I not have this based on these new terms? Is this something new? Has the disease changed? And so the purpose of this survey was to really go out to the globe, go out to the world's experts and really ask them, do you think change is needed? What would you be looking for? And if you were looking for a new model, what new set of tools to describe MS? What would you want it to do? So that's what we were going for. And we believe very strongly that, you know, it takes more than 12 experts saying this is what it should be. We actually need a community to help us say what it should be.
I heard you mention that you went out to the globe, the global MS mm-hmm. community, and boy, you certainly did. To say that this survey was broadly distributed would truly be an understatement. I mean, it was distributed in North America, Latin America, across Europe, Africa, it was distributed through a number of different channels, platforms, and organizations that ranged from the National MS Society to Twitter, now X, I guess, with mm-hmm. lots of other distribution channels in between. So what was the response to the survey?
So and it's a great observation you made. So we actually had 502 people, most of them neurologists and experts respond. Most of them, 87% of them were doctors or researchers, mostly, like I said, neurologists, MS specialists. Importantly, 49 countries, you know, were represented. So we were able to get a lot of perspective. Now, I will say, just in, you know, transparency, many of the respondents were in North America, Europe, and then South America, which is where we see most of the MS specialists in the world. So the little bit of a bias there. But by and large, we had every part of the globe covered. And it really gave us a sense that, you know, we have a good community consensus around this, and that it could give us confidence that, okay, as we start looking at this data, what does it mean for our implementation of a new concept?
Can you share some of the top line results? What's being learned from these survey results?
Absolutely. And for those who might want to go dig into the paper is published in the Multiple Sclerosis Journal. It's open access, so people can access it freely, either through the National MS Society or the Multiple Sclerosis Journal. Full disclosure, I'm an author, John's an author, so we'll be open about that. So top line thing, the first thing to say is that when you look at these 502 people who responded, 77% of them said, you know, that, you know, had a, you know, the majority said something has to change, which was a really important sentiment that said, you know, the where we are today, while it works, needs to move forward. And so that's a good thing. What they also told us is that, you know, the tools we have today of MRI are working pretty well at helping me monitor the disease. I'd like to have new tools like a blood test, for example, to measure disease progression, to help me spot where a person may be on their disease journey. But they also told us not quite ready for prime time. So we really tried to dig in to understand, what does the community feel is ready for prime time? What does the community feel isn't quite ready for prime time? What I will tell you is, and I think this is one of the key things, is that, you know, we asked people that said, you know, if we go off and create a new framework for describing MS, what is it that you, the global community, want it to do for you as a doctor, but also for your patients? And so really in the top, the very top, 86% of them said, it's got to be easy to communicate to patients, that if it's complex, it doesn't work. The current framework we have is pretty easy to communicate. They also said it needs to be clinically validated. So what does that mean? It means that, you know, when we describe this, we can say, okay, these are the words we use, and here is the science that validates that the words we're using connect to what's happening in a person. So clinical validation is really important. They want it to be able to guide research and clinical trials, another really important piece, because people want better treatments. So it should, you know, you should guide those. It should also help us make treatment decisions, because, you know, some of the sentiment there, I would distill that down to say, is what's the point of having a framework if it can't help me understand how I'm going to manage my disease? And so that's, you know, what people are looking for. And then lower percentages, but still majority, 77 or so, said the drug regulators, FDA, EMA, and others, as well as the insurance companies, should be able to use this. So we took this as a strong sign that people, I would distill this down as the two things people are looking for. It's got to be easy to communicate. It's got to be relevant to what's happening in a person's life. And it's also got to help us get more treatments faster. If it can't do those things, there's no point in changing.
Yeah, and I think the concept that's driving this proposed framework is actually a concept that's going to check every one of those boxes. By talking about MS in terms of the actual mechanisms, it's such a win for managing the disease, because now if you identify that mechanism, it makes it easier for another research scientist to say, well, you know what? I want to work on something that mitigates or fixes that thing, that mechanism. Mm-hmm. And then, so it could very well mean you may take more than one medication, but whatever medication you take as a patient, you're going to understand exactly what each one is designed to do in order to improve your life.
Absolutely. And that's what we're seeing, you know, and I think in our podcast, I talked about how in cancer, we're starting to get to these places where there's like very precise ways where a doctor can say, you're here, this is what the treatment course will be. And based on the data we have a 10-year chance of recurring at this percentage. And I've had people talk to me about their experiences in that. And while we don't have that in MS today, if we build this framework, we're going to be able to then start organizing the science, organizing the research community, so that the person who is told today you have MS can have a conversation with their doctor that's informed and can precisely say, okay, we take this path, we go here. And if their disease evolves, changes, the doctor can then say, well, we see this here. It looks like it's because of this biology that's happening in your brain. Let's introduce now this new treatment to make a difference. And that's the aspiration. But, you know, like you and I have talked about, you know, I'd rather aspire to something high and, you know, really work hard to get there than set the bar so low that you can step over it.
So I'm curious, did the survey results contain any sort of surprises?
You know, I think what surprised me was one of the pieces is that there's still, you know, when I go to conferences, you go to conferences, we hear, you know, people say change is going to happen, change is going to happen. I think what I did hear was that there's still people who feel like, no, let's move cautiously because this affects people. And so I think it wasn't so much as a surprise as an affirmation that whatever we do affects people living with MS. It affects families because families also organize how they think about their MS based on what their loved one has been told. And so I think, you know, for me, it was perhaps not a surprise, but a reminder, you know, as you often share as well, is that, you know, we can distill this down clinically, but at the end of the day, humans are involved in this, and that, you know, we need to be able to be very strong on thinking through the impact on people. That's why we've created what we call these guiding principles for the framework that are in the paper, that, you know, we say that, you know, in the paper that the framework has to reflect what's going on in the biology today, but it also needs to say, you know, we know that the science today is still limited and that there are gaps. So we have to say there's going to be gaps and and have a plan for addressing those gaps over time. And also, again, it has to be able to facilitate good communication between the doctor, the family, and others. And the other element of it is, you know, as you know, this is a global survey. This is also a global problem. And so as we think about how we describe MS, it has to be useful in LA and Long Beach and Kuala Lumpur. It's got to be, you know, in Japan and Tokyo. It's got to be useful in Zambia, where Deanna Saylor practices. I mean, we need to be able to recognize that MS is truly a global disease. And as we use these words, they also need to be able to be ones that wherever you are, you can understand what's happening. So, you know, overall, I'd say the other thing that surprised me is we've got such a great response. You know, it's notoriously difficult to get people to complete surveys. And I think, you know, I'm just grateful for the 500 plus people that took the time to complete the survey. And also just grateful for the the co-authors, and you are there, Professor Thompson, Alan Thompson, and really the international group of people that are really committed to making sure that when we change, we make a difference that's meaningful for people.
And so what happens next? What are next steps here?
Yeah, a good question. So what we're working through now is we've taken the results of the survey. We've taken it as affirmation that we're on the right path. So the next step we're doing is, as you know from our working group meetings, really trying to come down to, if it's not going to be this framework, what would be the words we use? What would be how do we think about new things like, you know, the new concepts like progression, independence of relapse activity, PIRA they call it, or relapse associated worsening, which are really just more complex words that describe the underlying biology. But we need to think through how to incorporate those and then also test with ourselves to say, maybe the framework we have is maybe right, but we need to make sure that the data is there to support it and not just sort of assume that, you know, something has to be changed for change's sake. And so this is the sort of the wrestling that we're going to do, but the next step will be a concept framework that we then are driving towards presenting to the community next year that would then give us an opportunity to have community input to it. So have scientists, people affected by MS and others tell us we got it right, we got it wrong, here's how you evolve. And then the goal would be to publish this and get it out and then start organizing the community to get the science they need. So longer term process, but you know, the group is committed that we got to get this right. We have to get this right because, you know, we affect people with whatever we come up with, so we got to get it right.
Well, Tim Cutsey, thank you for all you and the National MS Society do every day to improve the lives of people affected by MS. And thanks for talking with me. As always, it has been my pleasure.
John, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/319. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.